Ice cold beer!
Popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jack.
I don't know what the big deal about Cracker Jack is. Did you ever go and buy a pack of Cracker Jack thinking you'd get a prize and find no prize in the box?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
To the ball game, take me out to the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back. We'll root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 1, 2, 3 strikes you out at the old ball game.
All right. Welcome back to the Bench Jockeys here on 101.5 UMFM. I'm Michael Els, and joining me on the bullpen phone, my pal Chris Zook.
Hello.
Hi. Back after an extended absence. Both of us went away on holidays. Contrary to rumors that were swirling that I was away to avoid the precipitous decline of my Minnesota Twins and not have to talk about it. I will address that. No, I went camping. You were out east. Neither of us watching baseball, though. Neither of these were baseball trips, but
That is correct. It was just a vacation for a sake of being a vacation. No,
sure.
Baseball.
Hopefully, folks enjoyed the baseball interviews that we aired in our absence. But we are back to talk about actual baseball. I know you had a couple of pieces that you'd read earlier this week that you wanted to talk about. I mean, you know, it's near and dear to my heart. Always the unionization thing. So maybe let's start with that one. This was Emma Bacciolari's piece in Sports Illustrated about what you need to know about the MLBPA's push to unionize the minors. A monumental step towards improving working conditions for minor league players, but still a long road ahead. So we have talked in the past about, and particularly when we've mentioned Tipping Pitches, the podcast that both Brian and I are big fans of, and that they've been selling merch in support of minor league players and their working conditions and their pay, because very often they are living below the poverty line in terms of their earnings, and they're restricted in terms of what they can do in the off season because the, you know, training regimens and expectations for them as ball players and in the hopes of making the majors really limits their opportunities to make outside income. And a lot of the things that they do to prepare themselves for the minor league season are not considered part of the job, per se, or at least in the way that the ownership groups define it, so as to not have to pay them for that, right? So, like, travel to and from, it's basically, like, only when you're on the field in uniform that they're going to pay you.
Yes.
And so everything associated with it is not included, and all of those things either have costs or take time or both that, you know, it really kind of drives down what they're actually earning. So you read this piece and forwarded it to me, Zook. Was there something in particular you wanted to address or something that kind of keyed into?
I just think, you know, this is something we've been talking about endlessly again. This is something about, you know, the PA, the Players Association. Because Major League Baseball isn't going to do anything, right? This system works for them, right? It has always worked for them, right?
Oh, yeah, going back to, like, Branch Rickey days.
Yes, I mean, but it's shocking when we're into 2022, right? It's one thing, 57 years ago is one thing, but this is 2022, and they're really, I mean, this is below the poverty line for most of these players, right? Of, I mean, we're talking about just conditions that, you know, yeah, I do appreciate them trying to push to unionize the minors. I think it's going to be a tough road to hold, to go through for the PA, because, you know, Major League Baseball will resist this all the way, obviously. But I just thought it was just something, just it was interesting that, you know, now that's kind of come out, because it's because we people forget, because it's you know, short term memory a bit, but there was actually kind of there was a lockout at the start of this year, right? We actually,
yeah,
right, is that we got delayed 2 weeks to start the season because, you know, the PA and Major League Baseball were kind of on a vast amount of areas, and this is one of them, right? And this is something that will never get addressed unless someone pushes the issue, right? And so I think it's nothing but a positive, at least, to try and move the ball, right?
Right.
And can that happen today? No. But could it happen sooner than later? I mean, someone has to champion their cause, right? Because, you know, we could talk about the millions of dollars of these players once they get to the Major League Baseball level, but how many players are toiling in the minor league system? Plus, on top of that, is where MLB has gutted the minor league system, right? They disbanded numerous organizations over the last couple of years, you know, and what benefit was that, right? They're just trying to save a dollar, right?
Right.
This is always at the end of the day.
As you said, you know, a system that has worked for the MLB, I mean, worked in the sense that it's been a cash cow, or at least, you know, a system that they designed and controlled. You know, our definitions of working are two different definitions, ours and the league. But that, you know, when they slashed a ton of minor league teams, it was kind of a take our ball and go home kind of move to
totally
control, continue to exert control. You know, the whole bunch of people in front offices and you know, concessions and things like that lost income or jobs outright as a result of that move. And that was something that they just unilaterally decided to do. And unfortunately, you know, in the same way that so many like college athletes don't get to the pros, so many minor league athletes don't get to the pros. And so, yes, some of them, when they do wind up in the major leagues, make significant money eventually, but the great majority of them don't, and work under these conditions for years with the hope of maybe getting to the majors, and don't make it to the majors. And so the like carrot or the promised reward at the end of this like toil is an unfair thing to do to the people toiling, right? And also, I mean, as we've talked about in terms of like nutrition and things like that, it's really dumb to like not provide them enough money to eat well when, you know, athletic performance is fueled.
Because also, this is supposed to be, you know, some of these players can move on to the major league level. Would you not want to provide them the best opportunity, right, to fuel them up to perform at a peak performance so they can reach that next level? It's baffling. Like, where literally there's, you know, what, 10 sleeping in one apartment, or them just sharing pizzas because that's all they could afford. Like, I mean, we're talking
like living
about
off peanut
basic,
butter sandwiches or something.
Right, we're talking about basic living wage. Like, it's not like they're not asking for millions of dollars. They're asking for just a livable wage so that you don't have to have just PB and jam, you know, all the time, right?
Jam, like, if they're lucky.
Yeah, it's just, it's kind of, when you think about it, it's kind of shocking in 2022 that we're even discussing this. Like, shouldn't some of this have been rectified by now? But again, in for Major League Baseball, why did they need to change it? It works for them. They're fine with that, right? And so it's to the PA to kind of push this and see what they can do to kind of, you know, evoke some change and some, you know, maybe, you know, change a little bit of the power structure here a bit. Because if you don't have a strong minor league system, you're not going to have a strong major league system. It seems to me they're connected, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it is up to the PA to drive this, because like you said, the league itself has a vested interest in continuing as it is, right? It's the most profitable way for them to operate. And strengthening unionization at the minor league level only helps the PA when it comes to bargaining at the major league level, right? One of the tools, or at least kind of assets the league has had in negotiations with the MLBPA, is they can play, in the past, have played major leaguers off against minor leaguers, right? With these, you know, possible promises and delayed or deferred, you know, like minor, like rookie deal, rookie level deals, right? Like that's like the vets versus the like fresh crop of rookies has always been kind of like a schism. And then major leaguers versus minor leaguers has, you know, afforded them an opportunity to kind of like negotiate in bad faith. The Players Association has, you know, kind of hamstrung itself in the past by dividing the two. So if the move last Sunday to send out union authorization cards to all minor league players is a big move. I mean, obviously it's not unionization outright. It's not an election, but it is the beginning of a process that would align these two groups of players into like one larger kind of block, right? That like you're not gonna play this set of employees off against this other set of employees. We're all employees, and we recognize that fact, and we're going to bargain in a much more holistic or collective way.
I think so, and I think just strength in numbers, right? Like, you know, if they come to the bargaining table, they can come kind of from both perspectives of it. I do just think there's that connection, right? Is that yes, it's different because it's a minor to the major leagues, but where do all majority of those players on the major leagues come from? The minor leagues, right? Like, you know, we could talk about all these rookies that are doing so well this year. They kind of, they're playing in the minors before they get to the majors majority of time. It just makes a lot of sense to me. But again, we've talked about this endlessly, but the Major League Baseball, like the higher-ups, they do not care sometimes.
So if a player signs the card, I mean, it's indicating two things. One, they're interested in being part of a union, and two, that they'd like that union to be the MLBPA. And if a player sign indicating widespread support for unionization, they can move forward with the process. You know, if they get signatures from more than 50% of the players, the league could recognize the union voluntarily rather than require an election. This happened in the NBA. So,
yeah.
Excuse me, the G League. So the developmental league for the NBA, for folks who maybe don't follow the NBA, that's the kind of the minors of the NBA. They distributed a union authorization cards a couple years ago. 80% of players signed, and the NBA voluntarily recognized it.
Yeah.
Now, of course, with our fantastic history of the MLB and unions, pretty unlikely that they're going to voluntarily recognize it.
Right.
I mean, you know, taking Kurt Flood to court back in the day kind of suggests that they will fight this, or at least, you know, drag their heels, right? I mean,
for sure.
They drag their heels on any decision that seems very obvious, right? Cleveland Guardians are our most recent example of that. But yes, if 100% of the players signed their card, the MLB wouldn't have to recognize the union right away, but that would take to the formal election path. And if they do proceed with an election and it is a successful election, then MLBPA is now representing all players at the minor and the major league level.
And I would think that's nothing but a positive for the players in both leagues, right? So, I mean, I would say I'd tip the cap for that and hope we have more news to talk about this down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. So we will keep an eye out for that because definitely a topic near and dear to our heart. It's September. September 2nd today.
It's beautiful, isn't it? Now, if no one cared about baseball, care about baseball this month because we're ramping up into the playoffs here, right?
Yeah. We are definitely ramping up into the playoffs. And you sent another little piece. Now, admittedly, you know, they're only a game and a half behind the wild card right now, so they're legitimately in it, and they are above 500, which
they're way above
531 as of right now.
Tell the team that you're talking about, because it's kind of weird that we've actually probably never talked about them at September 2nd for about like 5 or 6
years. Gosh, several years probably. I'd have to go back and look. But yeah, the Baltimore Orioles sitting at 69-61, a 531 winning percentage and a game and a half out of the wild card. And so the piece that you sent earlier this week, Tom Ferducci, writing on, I guess it was Monday, how the Orioles became the most unlikely playoff contender in MLB history. Now, I don't know, maybe, I mean, it's, you know, hyperbole when you're writing a headline. That,
sure.
And maybe even Tom Ferducci didn't write the headline, let's be honest. There might be a copy editor who did that for the clicks. But the most unlikely playoff contender, I'd love for, when we get Brian back on maybe next week, I know he likes to go deep diving on MLB history. When he was trying to, you know, talk to us about Dave Steeb's career, that certainly,
yeah.
We'll assign him the role of most, finding us the most unlikely playoff contender and whether these Orioles are it. But my goodness, yeah, we did. We went on holidays. I was not expecting to be talking about the Orioles in the playoffs.
No, but let's say this, because where I think where the article kind of is anchored is Baltimore lost 110 games.
Gosh, yeah, I know.
Right? They lost 110 games.
And they really didn't seem like a vastly different team to start this season, right? So, like, I think we wrote them off on day one.
Sure.
Like, if we'd been talking, like, which teams are going to be among the very worst this season, and I think we even maybe did this exercise, I had no qualms about putting Baltimore in the same boat as, you know, Oakland or the Reds, like folks that I was thinking like were having a fire sale before the team season started.
And I know this because when I said if four teams come out of the AL East, you know, with the wild card to get in the playoffs, it was not Baltimore as the fourth team. It was Boston,
no.
Right?
Like, yeah.
There's no way we're thinking Baltimore, because why would you? And not only that, they traded away players at the trade deadline this year.
Yeah, they were sellers. They were sellers in
mid-summer.
They didn't think they were doing this.
I mean, it's hey, can they make it? That would be, you know, we'll see in the next month, right? But I'm Brian could talk about this, right? The Jays right now are the third team in the wild card in the AL, and Baltimore's only a game and a half, and they play each other. Like, I don't know if I'm not, yeah, I think the Jays play Baltimore, and they'll play a lot of the AL East in the next month.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, it always ends up, you know, feasting on each other at the end of the season here. So I'm just pulling up their schedule. So we've got September. So they're at the Pirates this weekend. This is the Jays. Then the next series, starting on Monday, is a three-game series against Baltimore.
Right.
And then they
finish with three games at Baltimore at the end, at the start of October, right? So they're going to bookend sort of, you know, this is kind of the sprint now, right? There's about...
Well, so they have two more series after next week. So they have, on September 16th, they have a three-game series at home.
Oh, they do. That's right.
And then they finish, their last three games are in Baltimore, starting October 3rd through 5th.
Because for a quirk of the schedule, they didn't play Baltimore to very late to start their series with them, right? For some reason. And
yeah.
So, yeah, you've got 4, 7, 10 games with Baltimore. And this is weird to say, but those 10 games could kind
they
of decide the wild card, right? Like,
yeah, I'm just pulling up Baltimore's schedule as well just to see who else they're facing. Oh, you know, they got the Tigers for three games. Admittedly, they have... Oh, and then they have the Red Sox, of course, right? I mean, you know, you got your other AL Easts. Really, the Yankees is the only series of any... Oh my gosh. So their weekend... They're home for the Oakland A's before the Jays come to town. They can rest their starters all weekend and actually, like, win a few.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, hey, I just wanted to bring that up because it was a very, we haven't talked about them. They kind of flew under the radar, but they're there at the start of September. They're only a game and a half back. They're teams above 500. They're ahead of your Twinkies in the wild card right now. And, you know, and then the Twins actually will probably have a better shot with the division than actually the wild card, if could be said. But yeah, I mean, this is an exciting time now, right? Like, if we just kind of technically got through the dog days or after this weekend. And then it's the sprint to the finish, right? With that third wild card, I will say it brings a lot more teams into play, right? Even in the National League as well. But I just thought it was very unique there. We rarely talk about Baltimore. Why would we for the last half a decade or so? But I think they're in the mix there. I mean, they're you know, Seattle's right now in a playoff spot, and Seattle hasn't been in the playoffs for two decades, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of movement since we've been on the break there, and now it's kind of crunch time for these teams, right? As much as, you know, we've played, you know, 5 months of the year, it's really this last month now that really will make the difference of who's going to get in and who isn't. And if you're a Blue Jays fan, you'd felt good about a week ago. And
chewing
then,
on your fingernails right now.
Oh, my goodness, that Angels series they had was a disaster, and they didn't play the best against the Cubs. They won some, which is good. But, you know, this is the weekend. They're playing the Pirates. They have to win. They have to sweep that series, right? You have to beat the teams that are beatable, right, and that are
well, particularly when Baltimore's playing Oakland, that's who you're kind of essentially in competition with right now. You need to make sure that you're at least staying even with them before you face them next week. Baltimore, 18th in runs and 13th in ERA. Brandon Hyde, the manager, said, you know, if you look at our stats, you don't see that we're 7 games over .500. We're middle of the road pitching and middle to bottom hitting. It's kind of wild.
It is. I mean, they're only a plus 17 in the run differential, right? Like, if you look at some of the stats of it, doesn't kind of equate, but somehow
the ones that defensive runs, they've gone from 24th in the league to 9th in the league on defensive runs saved. So they're getting really great play in support of their pitchers.
And the one thing they also said in the article I thought was interesting is the ballpark used to be a hitter's bandbox a bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they moved the fences back,
yep.
And it seems to have helped their pitching. And their home record right now is 37-24, and I'm sure over the last 5 or 6 years it's been the opposite, right? That people, visiting teams came in there and feasted on the Baltimore pitchers, and just the Camden Yards was available to hit home runs all the time.
So they do have a positive run differential of 17 right now. So, I mean, not surprisingly, the only team below them in the standings in the AL East has a negative run differential, right? Like that, you know, you do have some expectation in terms of like performance through that stat. And so they are sitting positive, which is not something that they were a month ago, let's say.
It is amazing. We're talking about the Baltimore Orioles in September.
Yeah. You know,
can I tip a cap here?
Sure,
please
do. I
don't know if you saw this yesterday, but Spencer Strider, the rookie from Atlanta, set a Braves record. 16 Ks in a 9-inning game. And to say how big that was, John Smoltz had the previous record at 15. He did once against the Mets in 2015, but I always, or 2005, but I always like to bring up the Montreal Expos, and he also did one against the Expos in 92. So, and also Warren Spahn at 15. So that's quite an accomplishment.
Well, and when you think of the quality arms that Atlanta have had over the year, right? Like we've got Hall of Fame pitchers.
Yes.
And this kid sets the record for most strikeouts by a pitcher for this squad. That's a feat, right? Like to come in and, you know, you got Maddux, you got Glavine and Smoltz. There's like guys that have dealt and ended up in Cooperstown as a result of it. And this kid sets the record. That is a definite tap.
I don't know, 16 strikeouts regardless, wherever you are, is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
But good on him. If you've had him in fantasies this year, you've ridden Spencer Strider all the way through because it's quite impressive there. I mean, and again, that's one of the great battles is Atlanta and the Mets, right? In the NL East, they are. There's going to be some good battles here as we go through the next month. But that's definitely one. It's only 3 games separate them. The defending champions with the Mets. And, you know, the Mets have got, they got DeGrom back and Scherzer's back. And so they're just trying to hold on to that position. But it's good, right? We love races, right? I mean, the one in the AL Central.
Atlanta and the Mets only square off one more time before the close of the season. I just pulled up the Mets schedule. It's the second last series starting September 30th. They have three games, but between now and then, they'll just be duking it out in the standings and not on the field. Yeah, no, AL Central, absolutely. We are a game behind the Guardians. We, of course, being the Minnesota Twins, I will. Like I said, I'm not going to duck the fact that they did have a bit of a swan dive while I was away.
But you know
it was not planned.
My
wife's work schedule, she has to book her holidays like February. So,
can I also tip a hat here? I don't know if you've seen this phenomenon the last little bit, but we talked about the Mets. Have you heard about this Timmy Trumpet playing Narco for Edwin Diaz's entrance? It is the new sort of Hell's Bells for a closer. If you haven't seen this, please, by all means, get on YouTube and watch it.
Okay, I'll link to a clip on the show notes.
There's this one where he's playing it live against the Dodgers. He's coming in, and they have literally, it's kind of like a wrestling.
This is the Blaster Jackson Timmy Trumpet track.
Right, and he's coming in, and they got the camera all on Edwin, and the crowd's going nuts. And they show a picture of LA manager, what's his name now? Who's the LA manager?
Dave Roberts.
Dave Roberts, right? And he is smiling, grin to grin, just seeing what's going on here. Because it's basically about 2 minutes of him just kind of walking in from the bullpen onto the mound. And they got this Timmy Trumpets going, and the fans are, and the mascots. And it's just, you know what? It's fun. That's all I'm just saying. Like, you know, sometimes the peers don't like it and stuff, but yeah, you got to have some fun with this, right? I mean,
well, it's dark days for the baseball the right way purists, because also our pal TLR is taking a little break from baseball. You texted me, you know, he's sick, and I said, "Oh, is he sick with the suck?"
Well, I'll say this: that season has gone disastrous for the White Sox. Right?
I was reading today, MLB.com had a piece about a players only meeting that they're holding in Chicago to try to right the boat on the White Sox season.
I mean,
now,
and the funny thing about that, they're only
sub 500. They're only four back. They're sub 500. But you know, when I was talking about run differential, so the Twins sitting at plus 38, White Sox negative 37.
Yeah, that's just not going to do it, right? Like,
they're actually three games above their expected win loss based on the differential.
Right. Even if they somehow get some, like, I don't know. I mean, you know, they were the perennial of front runner or favorites at the start of the year, and they're one of the more underachieving teams. And something's happened, right? Like, I mean, obviously, the year two of La Russa has gone disastrously.
It's gone disastrously, and fingers crossed, Jerry Reinsdorf kind of figures that out and gets
rid of them. I personally, if you're a Twinkie fan, let him suffer a bit
I
more.
Guess.
Right? You're right with
but
that.
But as someone who's not a fan of his, let's get him out of the league. There are deserving managers, prospective managers out there.
Lots more about that. And again, if you're in the Winnipeg region, before we wind up, and you want to, is the Gold Ice still? They got one more series, right?
Yeah, I believe that's correct. Yeah, one last hurrah. I mean, as we summer rapidly turns to autumn. But
this is an exciting time of the year. This is where, if you're a baseball fan, this is, you want to see some live or watch them on the TV or whatever app is available, major leagues or minor leagues. It's just fun to watch. This is playoff time coming up here.
Yeah, so tonight 6:30, tomorrow 6 p.m., and then Sunday 1 p.m. versus Sioux Falls. That's the Gold Eyes, goldeyes.com for tickets. I will mention, of course, Pity Party at 1 p.m. Brian's got a new episode he recorded. He should be back here on the Bench Hockeys next week. And then coming up in, just a minute, it is the last of the 100th episodes for 204 Rise, one of our fellow shows here at the station. They hit 100 episodes this week, and instead of just doing one episode, they did five. So 101.5, however they're counting their numbers of episodes. Congrats to them on the milestone. And we will be back here to talk baseball next week.
And let's play ball!
Strike three, you're out!